couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Desperate Hour, No Exit, the first nudie musical, Murderville, and The Cleaner. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Alligator. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@themovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big piece of news that's sort of roiling the movie world is what happened with the Oscars. One of the things people have been talking about for years is the loss of ratings with the Oscars and what they can do to spruce up the program, so to speak. And I talked a little bit about that last week. And of course, the Academy, in full Academy mode, did one of the worst, most tone-deaf things you could do. And what they did is they sent out a letter announcing that they were going to take 8 of the categories and give them out earlier, like an hour before the production, and videotape it, and then edit those winners and their acceptance speeches into the ceremony. Now, they didn't give a whole lot of detail here, and they're like, oh no, everybody still gets their Oscar moment, everybody still gets their spotlight. But one of the things you know absolutely is going to happen, they're going to edit down their acceptance speeches. And it's going to be very clear that these are second-class awards because they won't get the full live treatment. And no matter what they say, it's still second-classing these awards. But some of the awards that they're giving out, they're talking about stuff like, here's the list, it's all the short films, which I always love. I think that those need more attention, and I think that those are labors of love, especially when you get into the documentary short. Nobody makes money on documentaries, and they certainly don't make money on documentary shorts. But yeah, so documentary shorts, animated shorts, and live action shorts are going to be shoved to the side. But also, listen to some of these other ones. Film editing, makeup and hairstyling. In the year we've got Cruella, they're doing the makeup and hairstyling in the sidelines. Original score? You do realize that when it comes to making money for these movies, the score is probably the second most important thing, because people will go see the movie, but then they'll go buy the score. Who didn't grow up at least with a couple scores from movies in their homes, whether their parents bought an LP back in the 70s or whether they bought their own tapes or CDs or download them? But also production design and sound. It's basically everything else that makes a movie. And the thing that's so insane about it, this isn't going to make the ceremony any shorter. Part of the thing I've been saying, they don't need a 3-hour ceremony. That's part of what is driving the Oscar ratings down, is that they're taking hours to present a slate of a couple dozen awards. But this is a quote. Actual quote from the letter that the Academy sent out. In order to provide more time and opportunity for audience entertainment and engagement through comedy, musical numbers, film clip packages, and movie tributes. Really? Whenever I've heard people complain about the Oscars, you know what I don't hear them say? Gosh, I wish there was more celebrity comedy bits. Oh, gosh, I wish there was more musical numbers. Oh, if only they just did a couple more film tributes and film clips. Nobody wants to see that. This is the Academy not getting outside of its own head and actually thinking people just want to see more crappy film clip. They want a shorter amount. Now, I know there's a lot of people who say, well, you know, it's because they don't have the big money makers. That's unimportant. The Oscars are the Oscars. You're going to be nominated because they think it's good films. Venom should not have been nominated for an Academy Award. I don't care what universe it, or Free Guy, or even Spider-Man Far From Home really shouldn't have been. Well, I mean, for the special effects, sure, but not for the film. I mean, Spider-Man Far From Home was a lot of fun, but at that point, that was just kind of a superhero movie. But here's another quote from it that I found so depressing. For the audience at home, the show's flow does not change, though it will become tighter and more electric with this new cadence, and the live broadcast should end, yes, with the Best Picture category at the 3-hour mark. They literally wrote it into their letter that they're not going to shorten the show. They said, nope, we're sticking to that 3-hour limit. Because we're stupid and we're dinosaurs. And that's the reason no one's watching. There are so many other options right now. Because they don't want to see the celebrity bits. That stuff, I mean, some of them are okay over the years, but really nobody wants to see the crappy comedy gags. Because most of the people in the Oscars, they need a script and they need an editor. That's why they are so terrible with a live audience. And on top of this, who's hosting the Oscars? Does anyone know that? Does anyone care? Quick, who's hosting? I'll tell you who's hosting. Regina Hall, Wanda Sykes, and Amy Schumer. And I think Regina Hall's a hoot. But I don't know how she's going to work, especially because her body shtick conflicts with the same shtick that Wanda Sykes has. And Wanda Sykes and Amy Schumer, have they had anything really noteworthy in the last couple of years? I mean, they've been on some things here and there. But I mean, the last thing that Amy Schumer did, she played an adult daughter of a family and she had Crohn's disease. That was her bit in the movie The Humans. So this is just a stupid move. I mean, it is. I'll go out and say it. It is a dumb, stupid, narcissistic, narrow view by the Academy. And when the ratings dip even more this year, they're going to be like, what? How did this happen? Because you're morons. You know how to make movies, but you don't know how to make award shows based on movies. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is The Bad Guys, which comes to theaters on April 22nd.
We're the bad guys. And this is the crew. Mr. Snake, Miss Tarantula, Mr. Piranha, and Mr. Shark. And rounding out the crew is me,
the big bad wolf.
We may be bad, but we're so good at it.
If you want to stay out of jail, you need to go good.
What are you doing?
We're gonna pretend to go good. The bad guys become the good guys so we can stay the bad guys. You know what I'm saying?
This is an animated film. You know, it's about predatory animals like sharks and snakes, etc. And they're trying to avoid jail time in a Zootopia-type world. And they are pretending to be the good guys to be so they can still be the bad guy. It looks like it's going to be kind of fun. It's sort of cute. I like some of the people involved. I always like anything with Richard Iowati in it. I think he's very, very funny. But I have yet to see anything that really kind of makes it pop and stand out beyond anything else out there. So it's still probably going to be a fun little lark. The next one I want to hit is Elvis, which is coming to theaters on June 22nd.
I wish to promote you, Mr. Presley.
One room party in the county jail.
Are you ready to fly?
Ready to fly.
Tomorrow, all of America will be talking about Elvis Presley.
What is that? Where's it gone? I'm moving around so much during the
tape. I can't move. I can't sing.
Some people wanted to put me in jail. So where's moving?
The way he sings is God-given, so there can't be nothing wrong with it.
This is directed by Baz Luhrmann, and he did movies like Strictly Ballroom and Australia and The Great Gatsby and Moulin Rouge. And look, I love his directing style. I love his lavish productions. I just don't know if Elvis is the kind of lavish production. There was something about Elvis as being that honky-tonk, and he's making it very splashy and almost flamboyant, and it just kind of clashes with what I feel Elvis was. Elvis was not flashy. I mean, he was flashy. I mean, yeah, he had the jumpsuits and everything, but he wasn't that kind of flashy. He wasn't Broadway flashy, so to speak. And also, you've got Tom Hanks in here, and this, you know, Baz Luhrmann might end up doing what a lot of people have tried and actually give a terrible role to Tom Hanks. He comes across very inauthentic in the trailer. So I don't know. This one, I don't get a great feeling about this, but, you know, I've been wrong with this guy's stuff before. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about No Exit and Murderville.
Oh, oh, I love you so much. Oh. I can't let you go. Don't tell me no, I need your love.
2, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the new movies, and the first one comes from Hulu, and that is No Exit. A drug addict escapes rehab to see her mother in the hospital, only to find herself stranded in a snowstorm with a potential kidnapper in the midst.
My mom is in the hospital. I have to leave.
Darby, you know the rules. You leave and you're back in jail.
Road's closed.
I have to get to Salt Lake City.
No one's getting through until the storm passes. I opened up the visitor center for some folks.
I'm gonna get you out of here, okay? Promise. Getting you out of here as soon as I can.
This is by 20th Century Studios. It's one of the acquisitions from Disney. And one of the things that Disney is doing is it's funneling some of its smaller productions onto Disney Plus, and if it's an adult-oriented thing, you know, something that's dealing with drug abuse and violence, and it's R-rated, that stuff is getting funneled into Hulu. They did Vacation Friends a couple months ago with that one, and that's a great place to put it if they don't think it's going to make a great run. This is not a movie that needs to be seen in the theater. But it's a bit of a suspense film, and it's based on a book, which I've not read, but it's very straightforward. It's a very intimate thing. It's a handful of actors in it. I mean, it starts off in this rehab section where this girl has been through rehab multiple times, and that's kind of what happens. If you know anybody who's dealt with rehab, you know, relapsing is part of the recovery process, and you're in and out a lot of times, and she's in and out, and this is her last time, but she's has some problems with the law, and of course, if she were to leave, she's going to jail, but she has to leave because she wants to see her mother, gets caught in the snowstorm, and she ends up in this visitor center outside of Salt Lake City where people are just waiting out the storm. But when she goes out in the parking lot, she finds a van, and it's got a girl tied up in it, a little girl. And so she's trying to figure out whose van it is and who's involved and trying to save the girl. So it's this small, very intimate thriller. And it's actually done quite well. I have to say that I was impressed with the pacing of it. One of the things you get with these movies, which are essentially, they're on the level of a bottle episode of a TV. If you don't know what a bottle episode of a television show is, it's a small kind of one location place that they shoot an episode of something so they don't have to spend money. It's a way to conserve budget. This is just a small budgeted movie, and it takes place in this, most of it takes place in this visitor center, and you know, you only have a handful of characters in there, so obviously there's not a lot of choices. You know, it's not like you got 50 different people that you're worrying about. But it keeps you guessing, and some of the stuff's kind of obvious. You know, you can see some certain things telegraphed. But overall, I mean, I think it's good. Part of it is because the main character, she does a very good job kind of holding her own and recognizing that she is imperfect. She is severely troubled. I mean, she's dealing with a dying mother, and she's been in and out of jail, and she's a drug addict. But she's still trying to do the right thing. And I like characters like that. I like when you get a character who tries to do the right thing and is compelled to do the right thing, even if they are not always on the up and up in the general sense of the word. So this is an effective movie, and like I said, it's not perfect. It has some cliched moments, and it gets a little bit punishing at times. I've never been a big fan of like home invasion type movies where people are just getting injured or hurt or tortured. And not that this happens a lot in this movie, but I mean, in a lot, it's not nihilistic like some of these films are, but it does get a little bit unpleasant at times. But overall, I think it does a good job. But overall, I'm going to have to say that No Exit kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Murderville. Will Arnett stars as a bumbling homicide detective who gets a new celebrity partner each episode, and that guest must improvise his or her way through the crime and try to solve it at the end.
For Terry, Seattle, every day means a new murder case and a new celebrity partner.
Are you ready to solve a crime?
Ready.
Scream it!
I'm ready to solve a crime!
Let's go! Forget how strong I am. I want you to think of this as your crime scene. If we're going to crack this case, we're going to need to go deep undercover. Don't get caught.
These are our three main suspects.
Please choose who you think did it.
This is on Netflix. It dropped several weeks ago. I think it dropped in early February. And I've been kind of keeping it on the back burner because I've wanted to talk about it because I found this show to be an absolute hoot. It's based on a British show that I think does the same shtick where you've got this goofy detective who's got his own problems and they bring in, literally, here's your new partner. It's Conan O'Brien, you know, and the absurdity of that, you know, oh, here's Ken Jeong or Sharon Stone. They're going to be your new partner. So you are given this celebrity guest and the celebrity guest goes along and the celebrity's not given a script. They just have to sort of improv their way through it. So you get multiple moments where the guests will kind of break character or they'll start laughing or, you know, they'll be caught off guard. And that's actually really fun because you get to see Will Arnett trying to break these characters. And some of them, you know, like Conan's not used to doing, you know, like in the thick of it, improv type stuff, even though, I mean, that's what he was trained at. But, you know, he did a very structured television show for so many years. So he tends to break a little bit. Ken Jeong breaks all the time in this. And it's interesting because then it's kind of fun to see if you can pick out all the clues. And they're pretty easy to do. I was able to guess the murderer in an all six episodes, but puts me better than some of the celebrities. And that's how you know it's authentic. That's how you know nobody's given a script. Not everybody wins the game at the end. But the best part about it is the action and the reaction of people as they're doing just absurd things driven by Will Arnett, who's completely over the top. Like there's a moment in there where he's with Conan O'Brien. They had David Wayne come in, who's a director and actor, and he does magic, and Will Arnett's reaction to it is so extreme. It's just so absurd that somebody would have that high of an extreme reaction to the surprise of magic. It becomes very funny. And then you're watching Conan O'Brien trying to keep it together, and him having this absurd reaction. And that's the kind of thing that's a lot of fun. It's like 22 minute episodes and there's six of them. So I wish there was more. I don't like it in a show like in Saturday Night Live where somebody laughs at their own bits. I mean, it's funny when somebody who tries not to, but like when Jimmy Fallon was on Saturday Night Live, he broke every single character he did. And that's not funny. But if you watch the old like Carol Burnett show, Harvey Korman hated the fact that he would crack up sometimes, but when he did, it was so funny because A, it was rare, and B, it was unexpected. That's what made it so funny. So yeah, you always loved watching the old Carol Burnett show when Harvey Korman or Tim Conway would start to laugh or get the giggles. And so some of these characters and some of these actors, they're not used to doing on the fly improv. They're used to having editors and a script and direction. And so they'll be caught off guard and crack up. And that's the best part is when they're trying to crack each other up or they're kind of have some fun, but they're still struggling to stay in character. And Will Arnett carries it so well because he's just ridiculous. And I got to say, this is one of my favorite things that has shown up on Netflix lately. And I'm glad I got a chance to talk about it. So I'm going to say that Murderville totally rocks. Check it out. Six episodes long. You'll burn through it in an evening. You don't even need a weekend, just an evening. So yeah, Murderville totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Desperate Hour and The Cleaner. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's review The Desperate Hour. Naomi Watts stars as a widow with a depressed son who discovers on a jog that her son's school has gone into lockdown during an active shooter event.
County's been placed on lockdown due to an ongoing incident.
I don't have a car, and tell me what's happening.
There are five people barricaded. Your son is one of them. Our negotiator's in contact with
He doesn't have your negotiator son, does he? He has mine and an AR-15. Do something about it! Noah, where are you?
Help, he's here.
Who's here?
I'm scared.
Noah, don't...
Very much like No Exit, this is a somewhat intimate, small, limited location movie. Most of it takes place with her on this jog because The backstory is that her husband has recently died. I think it was a car crash or something. And of course she's taking it, you know, she's struggling to recover from that. But her son is also struggling from an emotional standpoint. She's a little bit worried about him, and you get a sense that he's got some issues, even though it's been like a year since the father had died. And so she's out there just jogging through this park or whatever. And then she starts getting news that there's this lockdown situation. So she's stuck there. She can't get to her car because she's like 2 miles away from it. And she's trying to call like an Uber, but the Uber can't get there. And there's roads being blocked off because of the active shooter situation. And it's her trying to get more information. And first of all, active shooter movies are really tough to do because they're just immediately politically polarizing. But they're also very easy to slip into cliche. But I think they do a really interesting job keeping it unknown what's happening. Because, you know, you wonder, is this kid a victim? Is this kid a perpetrator? Is this kid even at school? Because she doesn't even know that. Because when she left, he was still in bed. And so you're kind of along for the ride with Naomi Watts. And it really takes an excellent actor to carry that. And I'd say for a good half of the movie, at least, Naomi Watts is carrying that struggle. And she's compelling enough. It's sort of like if you remember that movie, The Guilty, with Jake Gyllenhaal, where he played a 911 operator. It was all on him. And the camera was just on him. And it was all about him making calls and trying to figure something out. You need a good actor to do that. And Naomi Watts steps up. So she does a really good job with it. Now, it's directed by Philip Noyce, who's done... It's funny, his career has had weird ups and downs. He's done some really good stuff, like Dead Calm. And he did like Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger. Those are two big Jack Ryan movies in the 90s. He did stuff like The Bone Collector and Rabbit Proof Fence and The Quiet American, Salt. He's also done some crap. He did The Giver. He did The Saint. He did Blind Fury, which was it was a martial arts movie with Rutger Hauer, who was blind. So he's done some garbage in his life. But he also knows how to put together a good taut thriller. Even his crap, even something like The Saint or Sliver, which he directed in the 90s, as bad as those movies were, they still had a good sense of suspense. They just had terrible scripts, I think, more than anything else. And so this one has a pretty good script, and it has enough twists and turns. You have a path of discovery that you go through with Naomi Watts' character. You know, the movie itself, it's intimate, it's small. It's one of those that I don't know this for a fact, but I can see a movie like this being shot as a response to the pandemic, because, you know, with just one person on camera, it's pretty easy to compartmentalize. So it's a neat little movie, and it's effectively done. Does have some corny moments, does have some cheesy moments, and it does have parts where you do look at that and go, well, that won't hold up in court. But overall, I mean, it's what, if you can get past those moments, it's pretty decent. So I'm going to have to say The Desperate Hour kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Cleaner. This is a television series. This BritBox series features Greg Davies as a crime scene cleaner who is continually distracted by the people at the locations he must tidy up.
You're a cleaner. The world is upside down.
Crime scene cleaner. Has someone died here?
Yes.
Then you're going to want to invite me in.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to stay.
I would be delighted.
You like your role, don't you?
You do get to see how people live. I say live, they're mainly horribly dead.
Don't you, Tom?
Most Americans don't know who Greg Davies is. He's very well known in Britain. He's a comedian, and he's best known for being on the TV series The Inbetweeners. If you're not familiar with that one, that's a movie about a bunch of teenage kids in England who, it is a coming of age, so they're involved in sex and goofing off, and they're sort of dorky kids, but they're all trying to, you know, like any kind of kids in high school, they're going after girls and he plays one of the teachers at the school. So he's got a kind of a small part, but he also had parts in series like Man Down, which is, you can find that on Netflix, Cuckoo, which originally starred Andy Samberg and then moved on to Taylor Lautner, but it is a British series. And I think Greg Davies is a hoot because he's like 6'5 or 6'6. I mean, he's a very, very tall man and he's a heavy set. I mean, he's not Winston Churchill big, but he's big and he's a little bit heavy. He's got a bit of a belly on him. So he's an imposing character and he's got a great wit. And the biggest problem with a series like this is there's only 6 episodes. And I was poking around BritBox looking for something to watch once, and I stumbled onto this, and I thought this was actually really clever. And it came out in 2021. I don't know exactly when it premiered on BritBox, but if you've got BritBox, you can watch it. And sort of the gist is he's this crime scene cleaner, and he goes in from place to place, and there's always something that causes a problem wherever he goes. Like in one episode, it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He wants to get down to the pub for curry night. And he gets into the kitchen where he's supposed to clean, and it's just a bloody mess. I mean, there's blood everywhere. And, you know, he's all upset because he's like, oh my gosh, how many times did this person get stabbed? And it was something like 120 sometimes. And he's like, oh, if you stab more than 5 times, it's just showboating. And he's just so upset that he's likely going to miss curry night because this place is going to take so long to clean. And then the murderer shows up, played by Helena Bonham Carter. So it has a guest star each episode, but it's not about the cleaner, but it's about a guy who ends up interacting with people. And it has these very interesting stories, and they're not typical stories, but they're clever and they're cute. And it shows a depth of character. They're written by Greg Davies, and he will dissect characters very interestingly. Everybody has their flaws, and everybody's flaws are way out front. And that's the nature of Greg Davies. But he also finds something charming and likable in all of the characters. And there's moments of discovery for himself, and there's moments of discovery for other people. And it's just a very interesting character study of somewhat of an acerbic character who meets these other people. Some of them are murderers. Some of them are just people who a violent act has happened in their home. Some of them are just people who are, you know, victims of accidents and that sort of thing. So it's a really neat show. It's very clever and very funny, wickedly well written. And like I said, I mean, I'm a huge fan of British comedy anyways. And this is one of the newer ones. One of the things when it comes to British murder mysteries, because, you know, look, if as many people were actually murdered in Britain as are murdered on their TV series, you'd have nobody left in the British Isles. But they have a lot of murder series, and some of them get very, very dour and grim and dark. You know, something like Broadchurch, which is a very good show, but it's heavy. It's not a lighthearted thing. This is lighthearted, but it does deal with real issues, and it does. You know, it's about a guy who's about 50 years old, not doing the greatest job in the world, but he's happy where he is, and it has moments of reflection. I think it's a great little series, and I hope they make more. Of course, you know, the way the Brits do it, it'll be 3 years before they pop out another 6 episodes, but it'll be worth the wait. So I'm going to have to say The Cleaner totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the first nudie musical and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Alligator.
See you later, Alligator.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and finish up the new stuff. Well, semi-new stuff. Certainly some nude stuff and semi-nude stuff. I know, this is a family show, but I do have to talk about the first nudie musical. This cult film from 1976 features a struggling producer who decides to make his own musical for the adult cinemas.
The word was out.
Fire out!
And they streaked from all over the country to audition for the movie that was going to set Hollywood on its heels.
I just want to do a movie.
Are you willing to perform in the nude?
Well, sure. As long as I don't have to take my clothes off.
Paul?
I got it, Rosie, I got it!
Well, I didn't give it to you.
The reason this one is showing up on my radar is because it was made in 1976. It stars Cindy Williams. Cindy Williams from Laverne and Shirley. It's right before she did Laverne and Shirley. And like, she actually had the character of Shirley Feeney show up in Happy Days. So this is in the middle of that character's genesis, we'll say. And it's got some other recognizable people, like Ron Howard has a bit part in it. I mean, it doesn't get nude in it, but it's clear that it's got a bunch of people who are in on the joke, having fun with it. And it was made in 1976, and it had a certain amount of charm, and a lot of people liked it. They liked it for the silliness, because you got to remember, this is about the time, it's around when Deep Throat came out, and there was this porno chic going on where normal people were going to the adult cinemas to watch, Linda Lovelace and that kind of stuff. So it was a weird time in the 70s. You didn't have videotapes, and so it was the distribution angles were very, very strange in this one, and somewhat uncomfortable. And so it kind of became this societal thing that people would go to adult films, and that was sensational to do. And so they made this musical of it, and literally within the first production number, I mean, like the first scene, there's a lot of nudity in it. So they're definitely leaning into the idea. So they're not, one thing that does irritate me is if you see a movie about, something like this. Like, there was a movie called Miss March, I think was the name of it. They're trying to track down a Playboy playmate, and there's no nudity in it. And I'm like, well, if you're going to be a movie about Playboy, you should at least have some nudity here. So they absolutely deliver on the nude scenes in this movie. But it's all done in an absurd way, where you got like showgirls dancing around with no clothes but a giant headdress and that kind of thing. And then all the jokes in the movie and all the songs in the movie, I can't play you any of the songs because they're all blue titles. And there's, let's put it this way, the things that you would expect to come out in a movie like this have a song based on them. And you can just go on YouTube and you can search the first nudie musical and you'll see some of the production numbers, and they're hilarious because they're so absurd. It's probably the first time you're ever going to see something like this on there. And this was made back in 1976. This predates Star Wars, So not that Star Wars has anything to do with this, but that's the thing. It was such a bizarre time in the 70s, and this does kind of capture it, but it's still a major motion picture, but definitely rated R, and it, and some of the music is kind of clever and cute. And while it's a bit at times, absurd and at times stupidly absurd in it, it's got some crass jokes in there, and it is weird seeing Cindy Williams use some of the language that she uses in this movie. She doesn't get nude, by the way, in case you're asking. The well-known people don't, but I gotta say, I enjoyed this. So it's the first time it's been on digital download. They've released it on disc, and I think it came out on VHS, but it's kind of hard to find. I think it was like an international Blu-ray was once came out. But it's available now on VOD and digital download. So basically anywhere you get it, like if you got Vudu or Amazon or Roku or wherever you buy your movies, basically online, you can get it. And, for such a silly premise, it manages to extend it as long as it needs to go. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was really kind of funny. It was clever and cute, and it was fun to watch at times, and not just for the obvious reasons. So I'm going to have to say the first nudie musical rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Alligator, which is getting a new release from Shout Factory. It's available in 4K and Blu-ray. And in Alligator, Robert Forster stars as a Chicago detective who has to track down an overgrown alligator hiding in the city's sewers.
You're looking at the one who saw it. And it was big.
You said it was dark. Now, perhaps you're mistaken. Alligator half that size would starve in a week.
He kept coming up with some garbage about alligators in the sewers.
Alligators in
the sewer?
Once it escaped, there was no way to stop it.
The safety of the public is my job.
Well, I've seen what this animal can do. You'd better take all the help you can get.
This came out in 1980, and it's one of the big sort of answer to Jaws movies, the Nature Gone Wild. You know, you had Grizzly came out, you had Piranha, and you had Orca. Of all the answers to Jaws movies, I think this is probably the most fun. I mean, it's absurd, it's silly, and it builds itself off of that urban legend of alligators in the sewers. Even, I mean, you can find they do end up in the sewers, but they end up dying fairly soon because of the bacteria, and it's not an ideal place for an alligator to live. But it's absurd at times and ridiculous. I mean, there's a thing where it literally crashes a wedding and just starts eating the maid. And it's so the other thing is that there's this biochemical company that is basically dumping waste into the sewer that it's like got growth hormones to it. So this alligator has grown to like 30 feet long and 2,000 pounds. And it like breaks its way up through the sewer system. I mean, literally emerges from the concrete of just the sidewalk. And I mean, it's crazy and it's over the top and it's a lot of fun. I mean, it was back in a time where you could really go graphic on a movie like this. And one of the things about it that makes it work is it is told completely straight. It is done in a way that they are not tongue-in-cheek in this movie. Robert Forster plays that hard-boiled detective. And you've got like Henry Silva. They bring Henry Silva in for a bit part where he comes in as the great white hunter who's going to hunt down this alligator because he's hunted down all these other predators over across the world. And they don't laugh and nod at the audience. And that's one of the things that happens now. Too often you get a movie that's meant to be a spoof. You know, stuff like Sharknado. I mean, Sharknado can be fun. But the problem with those movies from like The Asylum or those Roger Corman films now is they wink and nod at the audience. This one doesn't do that at all. It plays it completely straight. And that's what makes it work. It was one I remember I always wanted to see as a kid. And I remember watching a bad YouTube version of it. But, you know, the new version of Shout Factory puts together a really good show. And this is a great little 70, it still has a feeling from the 70s because I think it was shot in 1979, came out in 1980, but it really has that feel of a 70s monster movie. And like I said, of all the 70s monster movies after Jaws, it's one of the best ones out there. So it's probably also one of the best giant alligator movies too, up there along with like Lake Placid. So I really enjoyed it. And the Blu-ray, it comes with a bunch of stuff. And one of the things that's neat about the Blu-ray is, you know, they got the TV version, so it's a longer version of the movie. It's got deleted scenes in there. And they got, like, trailers and behind-the-scenes stuff. And they've got a commentary track. But the real cool part about it is they have an interview with Bryan Cranston, who, of course, we all know from Malcolm in the Middle and then Breaking Bad. And Bryan Cranston was just starting his career in the 70s, and he ended up becoming a PA on this set. And somehow they had found this out, and they did an interview with him. So there's a sit-down interview, a retrospective, where he's talking about his time working on Alligator and when he first met Robert Forster. And, of course, he later stars with Robert Forster in Breaking Bad, but this is the first time they ever met and they ever worked together. And it's a really neat thing. It shows what a nice guy Bryan Cranston is to kind of do this kind of stuff and to have some fun with it. But it also gives a perspective of a monster movie from like the lowest man on the totem pole, because that's where he was. That little interview with Bryan Cranston is probably the best part of the special features on the disc. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. Alligator totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Also available on disc, we've got House of Gucci and The Kingsman as new releases. And then some vintage releases. We have The Green Mile in 4K, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy in 4K, and Hard Target in 4K. And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The Batman. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.